Ready to go?
All right, ready to do some dumb shit? All right, let's do it.
All right, cool. Hey guys, here we are at episode 243 of the Brew Chat Podcast. Got Parker Allen all the way from Tokyo. He's here talking about his new podcast, Tokyo Wave. That's right, right?
Yeah, Tokyo
Wave. Okay, I'm just making sure. Before we get into that, I want to, first of all, apologize to Hofsauce, but also apologize to you guys. I had a great episode that I was putting out last week, so you guys probably missed and saw that I didn't have an episode last week. Well, I had one with the great people from Hofsauce, recorded that, and I'm still going through it, seeing if I can salvage it, but I've got a new setup here while we're all in quarantine, so things are a little different. I've had to like rearrange some wires and engineer the shit out of this thing, but I've got it. But I didn't quite have it for that episode. And as a result, the audio on their end is great. On my end, not so much, which is odd. You'd assume it'd be the other way around. But yeah, so I'm still going through seeing if I can salvage that at all. We'll see. But yeah, so apologies on that. But here we are back at it, episode 243. But before we get into it, get on down to Riverside Wine and Spirits. They are still open 11 to 7. And right now they've got it where you can pull in. It's very organized. They've got signs and stuff out. You can call ahead and order online. Or, do that. They'll just bring it out to the car. Or you can pull up. They'll come out like you're at Sonic. And they won't let you in the store. Chase will make sure you do not go in the store. He was kind of in a bad mood today. I don't hold it against you, Chase. I understand times are stressful. But you can't go in the store. It is not open to the public. So they'll bring it right out to your car, and they got everything you need still. But you can shop online, order it there. They'll bring it out to your car, and they will deliver. I think if you're within 5 miles, 5 miles and up to 5 p.m. So yeah, they will deliver. Aside from that, yeah, let's get into it. I'm going to hit the button. I'm going to listen to our theme song, pour some beers, or pour me some beers. You've got some beers, Parker. And let's do this thing. That's weird. That had some strange surround sound for me, but I have not. And I'm actually excited to have you here. And first of all, welcome. But excited to have you here just because you're in Tokyo right now, this may actually be the first episode where we're actually able to have real Tokyo beers or real Japanese beers. So
yeah, that's right. I think this is my third time on Brew Chat.
Yeah.
It is the first time that I actually have a Japanese beer, because every time I'm usually on Brew Chat, I'm over in Chattanooga, and transporting beer in airplanes is a very risky business.
Yeah, it is risky.
Explode.
Yeah, they do explode.
Well, I think cans are safer than bottles, but most of the good craft beer in Japan is not canned. It's only bottled, so kind of screwed. Maybe we'll have to do a Brew Chat in Tokyo someday.
I'd love to do that. And especially, I was actually thinking about that the other day, is with this whole COVID thing, it's the perfect time to buy airplane tickets. I mean, I'm always trying to look on the bright side of things, but yes. I think it's a fair assumption to say that 10 months out, we'll probably be pretty okay. So it's a pretty okay time to buy some airplane tickets.
Well, and obviously the biggest thing right now is that you literally cannot come to Japan right now. There is an entry ban on several countries, including the United States. So I would imagine right now no one is buying plane tickets to Japan because they don't know when they can come. I mean, it's an indefinite ban. There's no time limit on it. So
yeah. How are things in Japan with all this? Because I had not heard much from Japan, to be honest. It seemed like there for a while you guys were handling it pretty well. And then all of a sudden, I've been seeing you guys pop into the news, and you just got put on lockdown or something like that?
Yeah, well, it's a little bit complicated, but let me try and lay out the situation. And first, let me introduce myself.
Yeah, sorry. We just jumped right into shit, but yeah.
So I'm Parker Allen, and I am originally from Chattanooga. I moved to Tokyo in 2007, so 13 years ago. I'm a PR consultant and also a co-host on a brand new podcast called Tokyo Wave, which is now streaming on Apple Podcasts and all the other platforms. You can check us out if you go to tokyowave.jp. And essentially what we're doing, and kind of to go back to the whole situation in Japan, actually, is that in this coronavirus global epidemic, people are not sure who to trust for their information. And obviously, not just news, but national governments and normally places where we can somehow rely on the information that we are given, those systems are quickly becoming less and less reliable. I mean, there was just a news report a few hours ago that there's some doubt in the numbers coming out of the UK in regard to deaths. How do you miscount deaths? That they're doing it. And it's difficult because obviously every day people around the world die in considerable numbers. And unless they were in the hospital with a confirmed case of coronavirus, if they just die, I mean, you know, unless somebody behooves themselves to stick a cotton swab up their nose of the dead person, then they can't really confirm whether or not they died of coronavirus.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, there's probably other more scientific ways, but and I don't know if you actually have to stick a Q-tip up a dead person's nose to figure out if they've got that.
I think you would. And I mean, I read something today earlier this morning about how there was a confirmed case. I can't remember where. I do believe it was in the United States, though, of it jumping from a dead person to an alive person, of where they were transporting bodies.
Wow.
So, but yeah, what you're explaining isn't, that's about how I feel over here. And I'd say a good amount of people over here feel is, let me turn my mic down just a smidge here on the stream that I'm recording to. There we go. I didn't realize I was blowing that shit out. But yeah, that's a big problem down here is, or over here in the United States as well, which it's been that way forever. I mean, you know, with Fox News and then CNN, and especially with our last election and stuff like that, it had kind of hit an all-time peak of us being divided, and then this has happened and brought us back together. But something that we can all kind of agree on is nobody really knows what the fuck, like who to trust. I trust that Fauci guy in the White House. That guy seems pretty serious.
Yes. And well, but it's a real, I think it reminds us of the global situation and the fact that even the foremost, you know, research bodies and governments and, you know, like even the World Health Organization, I mean, they have information that's better than the information that we have, but it's not perfect. And I think especially in the digital age and with our kind of interconnected society, people think that everything is taken care of. They think that, you know, because we are so far into a developed society that bad stuff can't happen to us anymore. And I think this whole pandemic has proven a lot of people wrong. And I think even governments were lulled into a false sense of security that this is not going to happen to us.
Well, I think that's something, yeah, I 100% agree with you. And I think a lot of these politicians that were kind of caught off guard, yeah, they gotten complacent and gotten to the point of, oh, nothing bad's going to happen, so let's fuck around. Oh, yeah, bring these lobbyists in. It's mucked up our government over here.
Yes.
And
actually, yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
No, but the whole part about taking it seriously and before I forget, let me go ahead and say cheers. you know, part of Japanese drinking culture is you can't start drinking your beer until you clink the glasses.
Well.
So, yeah, now we're I'm officially allowed to drink. It's almost 11 a.m. It's happy hour somewhere. It's happy hour over there, right? It's past happy hour.
Yeah, it's about 10 o'clock here. And I'm doing what I've been doing a lot of recently is sitting at home and drinking alone.
It sounds like fun. Well, the situation over here is kind of interesting and sort of, it's really an anomaly compared to most other major countries around the world, because obviously in Italy and then Spain and now in the United States, you have this ridiculous growth in the number of cases. People are dying, and especially in certain hotspot areas, there's a total overwhelming situation that is the stuff of B-movies. But in Asia, the situation's a little bit more interesting, because obviously you've got all of these different countries in the Asian continent who remember SARS, and in the Middle East they had MERS, the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome. Mm-hmm. And I think being in America, you didn't really hear about it that much. But in Asia, we've had a fair number of pandemics. And the local governments, or the national governments and the local governments in these various Asian countries, are somewhat prepared, or relatively more prepared, for a pandemic situation.
Is that why, like, well, if, I don't even know what to believe about it, but even Wuhan is starting to climb down, but South Korea seemed to handle it pretty well.
Yeah, so the South Korean response is getting a lot of international press, and it looks like the South Korean situation is in a pretty high level of containment. It's ironic, actually. This is something that I have researched and confirmed, actually. I saw it on multiple credible news sources that the South Korean government did basically a war game for a coronavirus type pandemic 1 month before they recorded their first case. So they had just got finished practicing for the corona, and then it happened. So they were in a really good situation to do something about it.
Yeah.
And kind of the drive, not the drive-by shootings, but the drive-by testings and other things they had actually gamed out in this kind of pandemic war game that they had done. So they were really prepared. And kind of to go back to the situation in China, I think the jury is really out on that. I don't think we'll know what actually happened in China for several months, if not years.
Yeah, and there's definitely some shady shit going on.
It's really hard to tell. I mean, obviously they've got there's some talk about, you know, international journalists having trouble kind of reporting what's going on the ground. But one thing that you cannot deny is if you look at the current situation and the atmospherics, it does look as if it's a lot more contained than it is in the West. The scary thing, though, is that you see them in Wuhan and other cities that were affected by the pandemic. They're doing a lot of new kind of preventative construction and, you know, putting up walls and whatnot. So I think that tells us that they know something about the fact that even once they've kind of beaten the curve, et cetera, I mean, until we have a vaccine for this, we're pretty much going to have to live in fear for the foreseeable future.
Yeah,
I hear a lot of people talking about it, but
that's kind of exactly my thought, to be honest, is
yeah,
we're going to be living like this where, you know, constantly washing our hands, all that, for quite some time. We may not be on this social distancing order quite
exactly
as much.
Yeah.
But this whole wearing masks, and what's weird is watching people adapt is when this first hit over here and we didn't even have stay at home orders. Like, I feel like Chattanooga's real eager beaver to jump on the bandwagon of some things that happen nationally sometimes. And this is an instance where we did, And even when I saw it happening, I was like, are we jumping the gun here? But
yeah, actually, Chattanooga's stay-at-home order was really early. And,
yeah. Well, and even before the order came, plenty of people were quarantining. Just like, we're shutting down, going home. And really commending them on that is it seems to have really helped. Like, we've got, you know, knock on wood, a pretty low number of cases.
Yes.
And then relatively speaking, but I don't know. When it first started, nobody was on the road. It was barren. But as time has gone on, I'm seeing more and more people get out, which is why they put the stay-at-home order, is they kept seeing people go to Coolidge and places like that.
Yes.
And which is good. People don't need to be congregating. But outside of the grocery store, the gas station, or your home, you literally have nowhere to go.
Well, if everywhere is closed. And so that's the issue with these stay-at-home orders. And actually, it's an issue that Japan was faced with until somewhat recently. And still, to a certain degree, there are issues. But obviously, in the United States, I don't know, if you get caught outside, can you be fined or jailed, or is there any kind of penalty?
I don't think it's there yet.
Yeah. But they've made it very clear that you're not supposed to be out.
They have in Marion County, where my parents live.
Yes.
They have issued a curfew over there for 8 o'clock. And what a curfew does is allow the police to be able to pull you over, and you can get fined in that instance.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Japan has a bit of a predicament in that we don't have a emergency legislation that has any teeth in it. So the only thing that we can do in Japan with the current legal framework is say, pretty please, with sugar on top, stay home and don't go to work and close your shops. And thankfully, because of the way the Japanese society works, it has been surprisingly successful.
Mm-hmm.
However, up until this emergency declaration was called on April the 7th, there had been kind of soft-pedaled requests for unnecessary businesses to ask their employees to stay home or work from home. And the issue was is that the government was being a little bit cloudy with their messaging, and it wasn't an actual declaration. So companies and schools and, you know, various organizations weren't sure whether it was smart for them to keep on doing things as normal, or, you know, wrap things up and try and work from home, or suspend operations. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was, is because the national government didn't move, the local governments and even the local organizations had to make their own decisions. And so there was a lot of confusion. And when there's confusion, what do people do? They usually fall back on, well, I'll just do what I normally do, because that's what I always do every day. La-di-da. And that didn't work out too well for the situation with the rising number of infections. So on the 7th, which is about almost 2 weeks ago now, well, not quite, but they did call the state of emergency. And then everyone started taking it very, very seriously. And so now we have a very similar situation where unnecessary trips out of the home, shops are closed, and people are, to a very large degree, following these orders.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I'm curious, does Japan, like here in the U.S., we have a really big problem of just these old fogies running offices, whether it's a law office or a media design office or an accounting office or whatever. You've got these old fogies running it that are absolutely convinced that you cannot do your job unless you are in the office in a suit and tie. And this has been a really good situation that it's been hard for some people, but I've been amazed to see how quickly people have adapted. And it's really going to show some of these old fogies like, hey, maybe everybody doesn't have to come into the office all the time. Does Japan still have that problem, or have you guys gotten to the point where workforce people understand like, no, fucking work from home. It decreases our overhead.
No, and so you're absolutely right. And actually that problem is extremely prevalent in Japan because our kind of corporate culture and office culture is still very traditional. I mean, we still have a very deep culture of inviting clients and colleagues out for drinks after work and kind of the buddy-buddy, you know, let's it's like you watch Mad Men, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. And we don't have as delicious a cocktail, but other than that, really, Japan is a lot like Mad Men in the 1960s.
Mm, that's exactly what I was thinking, actually.
It's a little bit better on the gender issues, but it's not perfect. It's a lot. Mm-hmm. It's still a lot more old school, to use a weasel word,
yeah,
than the situation in the United States.
Yeah. But that's good. So, people over there have been like following the stay-at-home orders and all that.
Exactly. And it's causing a lot of disruption for people who are not used to that, because one of the funny things that I think people didn't realize is a lot of people, at least even in Tokyo, they don't have internet at home.
Mm.
And a lot of them don't have their own personal computers. So they were, you know, going to work and using even a laptop at work, which is great, but they might have not been taking it home. And even if they did have it at home, they didn't have a home internet connection because everyone's on their phone all day.
Yeah.
You know, the iPhone or Android or whatever. So you've got a lot of people who would theoretically work from home, but they don't have the infrastructure. And you can't just, you know, call the internet company in the middle of a pandemic and be like, hey, Ma Bell, come and get my fiber optic installed.
Yeah.
And that might not work out too well. And so you've got that problem. And you also have the issue of kind of business tools and infrastructure. So a lot of companies have these really old school like servers and security issues to where you can only access certain data or information or business tools when you're inside the office. And so a lot of that sort of legacy tech is still lingering within Japan's major corporations.
Yeah.
And it's causing quite the headache for these big companies that obviously they, you know, basically have to shut down operations because, you know, they can't really bring in IT consultants in the middle of a pandemic. So, you know, the people are, there's a bit of a catch-22 situation in that companies want to innovate, but they kind of missed the mark. And now they're basically faced with, okay, are we going to make our, because the emergency order here, as I mentioned, is just pretty please. So companies can ignore it. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of companies are either ignoring it or they're complying with it, kind of. And so that means they're still having people come into work, but they're coming in shifts, or they're taking precautions, or they're doing something else to where people still have to go to work, but there's some other sort of preventative measure so that they're ostensibly taken care of against the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And so far, I haven't heard a lot of deep criticism about that. I mean, maybe what they're doing is effective, but the problem is that once you've got someone who's got COVID, everybody else in that person's midst is going to get it. It's,
well, see, that's what's weird, though, is from what I've been reading is that may not necessarily be the case. I mean, you've got the obvious things like you could be hanging out with somebody and you just happen to not go near them, of course. But it's also, it seems pretty random in the sense that for some people, they can get it and they get the sniffles. Other people get it and they can't breathe.
Yeah.
And some people get it and they don't even feel anything.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you've been tested, but I haven't been tested. We can have it right now.
No.
No clue.
To be honest, I do think I have had it. I think I had it back like right before all this shit happened. Maybe I'm patient it's zero for Chattanooga. Possible. I don't know.
It's entirely possible. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think this reminds us that, you know, disease is weird. And they come out of nowhere and they go back to nowhere. And sometimes they kill hundreds of people and sometimes they kill millions of people.
Mm. When this is one, it's been around since the 60s, evidently.
Yeah. And so that's the crazy thing is that, you know, they knew about this disease, but I guess it wasn't interesting or popular enough for them to, you know, kind of dick around and make a little antidote for it or anything like that.
Well, that's the thing. Why are you dicking around and experimenting with diseases that you don't – that should be a thing. Like, sure, dick around with the disease and figure shit out with it, but you need to have an antidote or an antivirus for it. But, well, again, maybe that's why they were dicking around with it in the first place. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like they're making progress, but, I mean, the drug development process takes a long, long time. So I think the scariest thing right now is that, you know, until we have an antidote, we basically have this sort of holding pattern and, you know, some sort of a proven cure or a vaccine. And that's going to take, I mean, even with teams around the world working on it, it could take, you know, months or years. I mean, I've seen reports that they could develop something as early as fall, but it's April, and I want to go do stuff.
Yeah, same as we are getting the springtime stolen from us.
Yeah.
And it's like, I really want to get out and do stuff. Like, I was, when this first hit here, I like the weather had started getting warmer, but it was raining constantly. And I was just like, we didn't have stay at home orders yet. And it hadn't gotten really, really bad. I was like, man, the second this lets up, I'm going to go camping. Get the fuck away from all these people. Just go out and hang out in the woods. And then the rain stopped, but then it had gotten bad by that point. And now all the state parks are closed. All the state forests are closed, national parks, all that. They don't want you to even go to that area. So unless you've got private land or access to private land, there's nowhere for you to camp.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really it's made us kind of rethink a lot of things. Like even one thing, so in the communications industry, I've noticed that, I mean, you still watch like ads on TV, on the internet, and you see things that they're advertising and you think, maybe they should have stopped that.
Yeah.
Because they're advertising. Like I was just watching some, you know, I was listening to some music on YouTube and I got an ad for this drink that cures hangovers. And it was talking about like, you know, when you're out with your buddies, I'm like, yeah, nobody's out with their buddies right now. I think people are going to see that ad. They're going to be like, you know, screw you guys.
Yeah. When's the last time you went out and like, did something? What was the last thing you did, and when was it? Like the last fun thing you did?
The last fun thing I did was at the very end of February, and it was actually work related. I went out to a film shoot for a project in Niigata Prefecture, and Niigata Prefecture is famous for hot springs, snow ski resorts, and beautiful mountains. And also really, really sharp knives. And so actually I went to go cover the sharp knives, but on the way back, it was actually just the end of February. And I actually changed a hotel reservation at the last second because I realized that the situation in Japan was still kind of okay. And I thought, this is the last time for a long time I am going to be able to have any fun.
Yeah.
It's going to become socially irresponsible and not kosher to have fun. So what I did was I changed our return trip hotel stay to a ski resort, which by then was ridiculously cheap because the kind of onset of the virus and the kind of downward spiral that it kind of affected the hotel business that already started. So we went out with the core crew, and I skied for the first time in a decade, and I skied really bad. It was do you ever go skiing?
I've never been skiing.
Yeah.
Not a single time.
When I was in college, you know, I can drive about 2-2.5 hours in pretty good ski slopes. So I got pretty okay at it, and I was an intermediate skier maybe. But I went for the first time in 10 years, and I'm like, damn, I got old, and my, you know, everything hurts after like you.
Dude, that's how I felt roller skating last year. There was a photo shoot I did at a roller skating rink.
Yeah.
And, you know, they said they were like, yeah, if you want to skate, you can get a pair of skates. And so once we were done with the photo shoot, I was like, what the hell? I'll put the skates on. And like, I've not roller skated in over a decade. I got like one, maybe two laps around and immediate shin splints.
Yeah.
It was bad. It was a harsh reality check. But but no, it's the last fun thing I did was I had it was probably the last like week or two of February, and I had went down to JJ's with some of the comedians and hung out at Coin Op and JJ's for a bit.
Yeah.
Had a great night. We closed the places down, just hopping back and forth. Great night. But I wasn't thinking that night in particular, like, oh, this is going to be one of the last nights. But then maybe 3 days pass and it starts getting real in the United States. Yeah. And then I do start having that conscious thought of, I start going out a little more just because I'm like, I'm not going to be able to do this.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get it while I can.
There you go.
And I'm glad I did that because I was right. There's nowhere to go. Like I've seen a couple people, but overall I'm taking it pretty seriously and I'm staying inside.
Well, you have to take it seriously.
Yeah.
And it's actually funny you're talking about kind of, you know, last second, you know, kind of sweeping in there. So they actually closed down one of Japan's largest nightlife and also red light districts called Kabukicho in Tokyo's Shinjuku ward. And they just published a new article in a tabloid that uncovered a scoop that an opposition party politician, the day before they kind of closed down that red light district neighborhood, went to a sex parlor and spent 2 hours doing whatever you do at that particular sex parlor.
Get it while you can.
And it was I think it's going to make a Twitter today, but it just kind of shows that everybody, you know, everybody's little kind of weird kinks and picadillos come out in times like this. And so everybody's trying to get that last little bit of enjoyment, whatever that
one. Evidently, there's been a huge spike in people ordering sex toys off Amazon.
I wonder why.
Which, to some degree, I kind of got to say, like, ship those things out. It's kind of essential. In a weird way, it keeps people at home.
Yeah, I mean, if they're not going out and, you know, giving each other coronavirus in addition to other diseases, then everybody wins.
It's weird times, man. It is weird, weird times. When do you think, well, you basically said it just when they have a vaccine available.
Yeah, exactly. And so until we see some sort of a mitigation to this, because the thing is that it's not like the flu, you know, you can get it again. And so
I've heard a bunch of back and forth on that, just to go back to our initial point of you can't trust anybody.
I will tell you, I've seen actually sources here in Japan now confirm that you can get it again.
Okay.
So it's not like it's not like the flu, or it might be like the flu, but there's different strands of it.
Yeah. See, that's kind of the prevailing theory that I've gotten from the medical experts here in the States, is that you can get it again. The news are all still going back and forth, but from the medical people that I've listened to, you can get it again, but it seems to be different strands.
Yes.
At least from the way. And so,
I mean, that's terrifying, though. I mean, the fact that you can, you know, be on death's door and then you're fine and you're better and you're kind of back into action and then, oops, got it again. And especially, I mean, once you've contracted the virus, I mean, obviously your immune system is down. So I would imagine you're susceptible to getting this disease.
They've been taking antibodies, like out of bone marrow or blood or whatever over here, and doing blood transfusions and filtering people's blood.
Yeah.
And infusing it with antibodies, and it seems to be having a pretty decent success rate. They literally just started doing that like 2 days ago though.
Wow. Yeah, the weird thing about blood, talking about blood, so you've got these different theories on where this virus came from. And the most common understanding seems to be that it came from a market in Wuhan where they were selling raw bat.
Yeah.
And have you heard, so there's a specific type of bat called a fruit bat. And actually, I just, we recorded the last episode of Tokyo Wave, which actually comes out this Friday. Check it out, guys. But at the end of the episode, actually, we're talking about these fruit bats, and I keep on thinking fruit bats. I mean, that's such a weird name. Why is it called a fruit bat? Maybe it eats fruit, whatever. And so I look it up on Wikipedia, and fruit bats have an alternate alias. Did you know this? Fruit bats are also known as mega bats.
What? So they're like giant?
Mega bats. Yeah. They're
wait,
just
let me look up
bats.
One of these here.
Name. They're mega bats, man. It's
let's see here.
Search it. Yeah, it's I thought it, and it just it blew my mind.
Oh,
I'm like,
Jesus.
Why have they not made it here at us yet? Mega bats.
Jesus.
Yeah. This is the mega.
Yeah,
bat
look
virus.
At this thing. This thing is huge.
Look at that. I mean, yeah. I mean,
holy shit!
People decided, yeah.
Mega bat.
Well, I guess it does eat fruit, as evidenced by these.
Yeah,
photos.
Yeah. It's like look at that. It's got like a.
No, this is like if you put wings on a cat. That is outrageous.
It's a mega bat. But yeah, apparently people thought that was delicious, and unfortunately, that seems to be where we got the coronavirus.
Jeez.
Because bats have all these bacteria in them.
Oh, for which, sure. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think a lot of people ever think about that, but I mean, obviously, you know, bats suck blood, right? And blood has lots of bad stuff in it.
Well, that's how like all these viruses get started, allegedly. Like mad cow disease, I think, was started where a cow ate another cow. And so it's like is some sort of cannibalistic thing.
Yeah,
from
yeah.
The
yeah.
way I understand that, I mean, or somebody you know, fed cow to another cow. I don't know.
Yeah.
But then yeah. What if
they could make some kind of crazy disease after all those dumb kids ate those Tide Pods? Then we'd all be dead.
Yeah, let it kill those people off. You know, to some degree though, I'm like, this is a little bit of a culling. Like it sucks. Be careful, be safe out there. But to these people holding like their mega church services and stuff over here. Yeah. If you're going to go to something like that,
it's
I get
really,
it. You've got
really
faith
tough,
and no disrespect
man.
To people that got faith and whatnot, but have some common sense.
Well, and the really sad thing is that of course you've got two kinds of people here. You've got people who are being irresponsible and they're ignoring, you know, both local, national, and global organizations who are telling them to stay home and going out and kind of flaunting the rules or the requests or whatever. And as a result, they're spreading this terrible virus. But then also you've got the unlucky people who, for whatever reason, even kind of superficially interact with those selfish people. So you've got selfish people and unlucky people. And so the unfortunate thing is that you cannot know for sure, unless you know, you know, all of the details, who's been selfish and who's just been unlucky.
Yeah. And then
and obviously the virus doesn't have a moral compass. It's just like, jump, you've got coronavirus. Sucks for you.
Yeah. Do you know anyone with the virus?
Not personally, but I've started to see kind of friends of friends. People have been sharing Facebook posts and Twitter, you know, whatchamacallits. And
yeah.
It's it doesn't look very good. And I mean, obviously, some people have got it very mildly, and other people, you know, they're on death's door. We covered in a couple of episodes ago on Tokyo Wave actually, that a famous comedian got it and died from it. He was actually the first Japanese celebrity to die of coronavirus. Huh. And so you actually really saw a sobering effect on the Japanese public as a result of this highly famous person who was on TV like every week. He up and died. And I think a lot of people, especially, you know, middle class people, they think, well, you know, I've got health insurance. And even if I get it, you get it, you know, what happens, happens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really irresponsible way to think because, you know, what happens, happens, and you might live and you might die. I mean, roll the dice, yeah. Bro.
Yeah, there was that video of that kid over here at spring break that was like, well, if I get corona, I get corona, but I'm not letting fear ruin a good party.
We spent over 2 months preparing for spring break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But... yeah,
well,
it's,
then, you know, those damn kids, they traveled back to their parents' homes all over the United States. And guess what? You know, that you know, because you look at 2 weeks after stuff like that happened, you saw a lot of spikes. And so,
oh, yeah.
You know, we were talking about this Jacksonville cluster.
Mm.
I mean, just the name, like, you know what they were doing in Jacksonville, playing, you know, Scrabble.
Doing whatever they do in Jacksonville, yeah. No, it is really interesting to watch the different areas that have been hot spots, like New York, obviously. New York has the majority of the cases in the U.S. California's been pretty crazy, but California's handled it, or seemed to handle it pretty well. And it's just, it's more so that California just has a shit ton of people. Georgia also has a shit ton of people, but seems to be doing pretty okay, except their governor seems like an idiot. Florida, on the other hand, not so much. And then last I checked, like Houston, it's a huge city, but last I checked, their hospitals were still at half capacity.
Yeah, it's really weird. And the problem with the coronavirus is because it is so easily transmissible, you've got like X number percent of the people who they can actually trace where they got it from. I think they usually hover somewhere between like 20 to 40%. So, oh, you got it from this guy and they got it from that guy. And they can kind of trace back the coronavirus ancestry.com or whatever. But you've also got these people, and these are the majority of people, you know, more than 50% that you don't know where they got it from. So they could have got it anywhere. I mean, they could have got it from receiving an Amazon package, which is also something that, you know, is highly debated, but they have, you know, you see this in the news that people are getting, you know, samples of this virus from inanimate objects. And so obviously you're a lot less likely to get it from a package and it dies after a few days. But I mean, I actually got a parcel from China like a couple of weeks ago, and it was in customs for a month. Why do you think it was in customs for a month, Tanner?
Yeah.
I think there's some shit going down, and that's why it was in customs for a month. But
well, see, this
know.
Is
I mean,
weird.
Maybe.
I've got a package on its way from Singapore, and it's been on its way for 3.5 weeks.
Mm.
I ordered it, like, right as this shit was going down.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's taken forever to get here.
And so there are a lot of things that, you know, we don't have the full picture on, and I think some of it is because, really, even the experts are still trying to figure it out. And obviously, when you're talking about risk and precautions, I mean, you can't just tell people, stop ordering packages, stop buying food, you know, stay in your house, shut the blinds, panic, panic, panic. I mean, you can't do that. So obviously, you have to hedge your risks, but there's no way to completely eliminate them. So you have to, especially when you're in a communications role, and especially in a government position, you have to think about, how do I mix, you know, be vigilant, but at the same time, eat food and breathe and drink water and, you know, do all of the things that you have to do to live and survive.
Mm.
Obviously, I think one thing that people don't, it's easy to criticize governments, and I've also lodged some criticisms at, you know, various reactions to this whole epidemic and some missteps that governments around the world have taken, but one thing I think people don't think one thing that people don't think about enough is that governments too have a very complicated situation they're facing because they need to communicate a call to action without making people go over the edge. And we had that situation a lot in Japan where we had the politicians communicate something a little bit stronger than what had been communicated before, and people immediately rushed to the supermarkets, bought up all the toilet paper, all the masks, you know.
So toilet paper was an issue in Japan as well.
Yes, no toilet paper. We actually, excuse me, we invented toilet panic buying. We've been doing it since the 1970s. Yeah, world first.
Okay. Yeah, I thought that might have been in America.
Kabuki, you know, tsunamis, typhoons, and toilet paper panic buying. Those are all Japanese. You guys are copying us.
Yeah, I thought that might have been a stupid American thing. For a brief second there, I thought that might have been a stupid-ass, exclusively American thing.
No, so actually, and it's funny, I think the toilet paper panic buying started because of reports from Japan. And so most people will see those reports from Japan and think, toilet paper panic buying? That's ridiculous. But then you've got, you know, X number of people who are going to think, toilet paper panic buying? Buy it all!
Yeah. When what's weird is it's been like a month and the toilet paper is still not equalized. And it's like, I know you all aren't shitting this much. Like,
so who's that guy in Hicks' garage full of hand sanitizer?
Oh, God, that guy. The family businessman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The family businessman.
No, some of the, a pair of the local comedians here, I covered it on like an episode or two ago, but. They wrote a song about this guy, and it's pretty great.
I have to listen to that sometime.
Yeah, it's on one of the streams I did maybe like 2 weeks ago.
Awesome. By the way, you know, it's a brew chat. We haven't really talked about beer. Let me tell you about this beer.
Yeah, tell me all about that. Yeah.
So this beer is called Ebisu. It's premium. It is, I think, 5.5% ABV. Oh, that's just 5. But basically, this is a super traditional lager, and I'll read you the flavor text. It's called Premium Ebisu. It says it here and here, just in case you forget. It was established in 1890, and Ebisu itself is the Japanese god of fishermen and good fortune and money.
Hmm. It's got a good bit of little responsibilities there.
And he's the only one who has his own beer.
Money and what else?
Yeah, fishing. Yeah, fishing and wealth.
Fishing and wealth.
There's another kind of good luck god. So he's not a good luck god, but he's, you know, fishing and wealth. He's like the big daddy nasty Don Juan Japanese gods.
Yeah,
and his name is Ebisu. And so it's called, you know, you got the Y, but you don't pronounce the Y. You just pronounce the E-B-I-S-U.
Ebisu.
So it's Ebisu. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. And so rich and mellow premium beer brewed from 100% fine malt and select hops with Sapporo's traditional art. It's pretty sublime stuff. And so it is pretty good. And so this is like... What is this? This is it's the kind of go-to Japanese premium beer. So if you go to like a party hosted by somewhere fancy, like a law firm or some big rich company.
So it's like the Bells.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
This is that beer.
Like a very common but good lager. Yeah.
There you go.
Ale.
And it's very... I mean, it is like if you look up lager in the dictionary lets you, you know, put your fist to the dictionary and get a beer out of it, this is what you will have.
Okay. Man, wish I could taste it, but.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
And I've never seen it. So, you know, a lot of the Japanese beers like Sapporo, Kirin, Asahi, they have... contracts with AB InBev and Molson. Different companies have different contracts, but basically they're brewing it either in the United States or Canada. And so I think I mentioned this on a previous podcast together with you, but
the
Japanese beers that you buy in the United States are a little bit off. They're obviously they're produced based on the same recipe, but I mean, you know, the cows eat different things and mm-hmm. they poop out different things in
the water's United different
States or Canada. Yeah, exactly. So yeah. The beers taste different, and personally I'm not a big fan of the Japanese beers that you can buy in North America, but the Japanese beers in Japan, what is that?
It's the Blue Sour Saison. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just holding it up to the camera in case I use this for anything. Blue Tub. As the autofocus tries to find it.
That's one thing that I kind of... the American craft beer culture that I think we need more of in Japan is... Everybody who designs these beer cans in the United States, they have quite a sense of humor.
Well, no, actually, I've said this before, but it's because Japan's a little bit on the timeline. I mean, like this virus, for example, New York is really far down that timeline. Well, Wuhan's very far down that timeline, allegedly. Yes. Like, the virus started there, so they're going to get over the virus first.
Yes.
The beer culture is kind of similar to that, in that the homebrewing culture here in America and like just craft beer culture in general got started a little bit before Japan.
Well, also there's a lot more legal hurdles over here. And so even if you want to brew a craft beer, you have to brew a certain amount or you can't get a license.
And wasn't it up until the 90s? You couldn't.
Exactly.
It was some super low ABV. I can't remember what it was, but.
Exactly. And so that was actually a grandfathered law for creating amazake, which is kind of a traditional sake byproduct that's sweet.
Mm.
But they didn't really have any laws for craft beer. And so up until they changed that regulation, you had to brew a lot of beer to get a license to brew. And as a result, there were no craft breweries. And so they changed that. And so there are craft breweries now. But still, there are various hurdles. And I mean, even a serious hurdle not to be forgotten is just that buying all of the equipment that you need to set up a brewery, they don't really make a whole lot of that in Japan. They make a lot of it in Germany, and they make a lot of the United States now, but you have to import all of that and put it all together, market it.
It's not small equipment.
Yeah, it's big. It's big, it's heavy, and it's expensive. And so I've seen a lot of craft breweries. I mean, obviously this happens around the world, but you know, because of the huge investment, it's really hard to recoup that investment. And I think, you know, especially in this pandemic situation, I think we're going to see a lot of craft breweries go under.
So oh, yeah.
I would say if there's a time, you know, if you're a beer fan listening to this, if there is a time to support your local breweries and make sure they don't go out of business, now is the time. Drink up, guys.
Oh, yeah. And most of them here in Chattanooga are doing delivery. Or you can get them from Riverside or wherever.
Yeah, yeah.
But you can get local beers, at least here in Chattanooga, brought to your door.
Wow. And people should do it because, you know, here today, gone tomorrow. And obviously, even if you think you're supporting them by buying a six-pack, you best believe they're not making as much money as they did when they had a bar open.
Yeah. Well, and I'm pretty sure anywhere in the U.S. right now, you can get delivery booze. So you buy local. Wherever you're at, buy local. Help out your local breweries. And they'll bring it to you. Like, that's one thing about this is it turned into the Wild West quick over here, where it was like, you know what? Booze laws out of the window. You can deliver whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bitter Alibi was selling like just canned beers out of their cooler with a roll of toilet paper and a baked potato.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Just selling whatever.
It's a bitter roll.
Yeah. But, yeah, I don't want to run out of time, but tell me about your podcast a little bit.
Yeah, so Tokyo Wave. So basically our show is on Tokyo Wave. We give you weekly updates straight from our studio in Harajuku, which is where I am right now. And you can join us in segments featuring each week's top news, political happenings, business, and absolutely random garbage. And so essentially what we did was we took, you know, there's lots of podcasts and YouTubes and obviously there are newspapers and magazines and different people covering Japan. But
yeah,
there's a problem that we identified, and the problem is that you've got the really loosey-goosey stuff by people who are over here teaching English, or they're kind of here just kind of by happenstance, and they're not really familiar with the language or the culture, and they're sort of, they're observers, but they're not insiders.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got this really kind of soft and interesting but not really insightful commentary on Japan on one end. And then on the other hand, you've got the other extreme. You've got people who have been in Japan for a long time, and they're doing business-related kind of content production, or they're talking about politics, or they're talking about marketing or startups. And this content is very, you know, high value.
Yeah.
But it's also extremely inside baseball. It's like, I don't know if you like baseball, but I don't like baseball. And when you hear people talking about baseball and you don't like baseball, it drives you nuts because you don't know what they're talking about. And I think a lot of the more high-end Japanese content has an unfortunate shutting out effect on the overseas audience because they don't put it into perspective, and it's very hard to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously people in Japan are listening to it, but you know, you're talking about people who are going to listen to an English language podcast in Japan. That's still a somewhat limited market. So in order to access the global market, we're trying to bring a higher level of insights and information on what's going on here on the ground in Japan, but in an easy to understand, easy to consume way. And we curse and make jokes.
Sweet.
I'm looking you up on iTunes right now.
All right.
Oh, sweet album art, by the way.
Yeah, I had my good friend and photographer, Marc Antoine Astier of Boom Machine, do that. We really wanted to go for kind of a 1980s sort of vibe.
Really? I didn't get that. Not at all.
So, you know, we grew up playing GTA Vice City.
No, that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
And we had some alternates that were also really, but we have several kind of undercurrents and interesting themes on Tokyo Wave. And one of those is just this sort of, you know, throwback to kind of old culture and old school music, and kind of putting things into perspective, not just what's going on now, but how that's developed over history.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Mm-mm-mm.
Well, you nailed the album art. Let's see. Two episodes with a episode zero. Solid.
Yeah, the episode zero thing was actually dumb idea, because when you upload a podcast, you put in the metadata, the episode number, and you can't choose zero.
Yeah.
So actually, episode zero is episode one, and episode one is actually episode two, and episode two is actually episode three. And when we're uploading that, I mean, it's pretty ridiculously confusing.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be, for sure. Yeah.
Why did we do that? Well, so the reason why we did an episode zero was that we thought we were being smart. And so we thought, okay, the first episode is going to be rough, so let's call it episode zero, so that if we do take off and people want to see, you know, these guys used to be not that slick, I bet. So I'm going to go and see their first episode and see how bad they were. They're actually going to see the second one, but they'll think they're watching the first one. They're like, damn, those guys were pretty good back then too.
A lot of people will use an episode zero as like an introductory episode.
Yeah. And that's, like, that actually, yeah, that's kind of what we did. So we talk about,
but even the sense of like, hey, this is episode zero, this is what we're doing. I'm so-and-so, this is so-and-so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We went through our whole life story and all that BS.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so actually, just to kind of give people an idea of what we're talking about on Tokyo Wave, we have these different segments. So we've got segments like this week's top news. We've got a Tokyo Panic Room, where we talk about obviously what you talk about these days and this ongoing pandemic situation. We also have some kind of wacky things, like the weird thing of the week, We've got a random Inaka, which is basically a segment where we talk about random countryside locations and kind of pick up some more off the beaten path sort of places that you might not hear about otherwise. We've also got a Japanese politics segment called Japanese Politics Wow. You can guess what we talk about there. We've also got an economics segment called Yena Yena Bill Y'all. We've also got, this is usually that we wrap up the a segment on kind of creative arts, kind of culture related things. And that segment, we've given it a really meaningful name. Let's talk about creative stuff time. And so, yeah, each episode, we try and hit all the segments. They're about an hour each. Ramble on, ramble on, ramble on, like I'm doing right now. So sometimes we do not hit all the segments, but at least the news part, you know, what's going on right now, especially with the virus, what's going on the ground, what's the government doing, what's the global situation looking like? We kind of hit the highlights every week. So people.
Well, I do see here on one of your episodes, you've got who I would say has the greatest name to ever exist, Mr. Dick Pound. You talk about him a little bit. So
this guy is a member of the International Olympic Committee.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to ask about him and then what the general taste in the air is over there in Tokyo now that the Olympics are postponed.
Yeah, so the Olympics, people were very afraid the Olympics might get canceled. So the situation with the Olympic period is that cities, of course, you know, there's a competition every 2 years to host the Summer Olympics or the Winter Olympics. And so it's a very intense competition. And the stakes are high. And even once you secure the right to have an Olympics in your city, the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, reserves the right to basically be like, all right, you know what? Screw you guys. No Olympics for you. And so they've actually got all these contracts and things set up so that they can pull out for any reason at any time. So the Japanese government was very wary of the whole coronavirus situation from the onset, and they really wanted to try and keep the games going on as scheduled. And they were scheduled to start in late July, but obviously that was not in the cards. So they ended up deciding to postpone the games, but is kind of the forerunner to the actual postponement. The IOC member, and so it's a committee. So one of the members on the committee is a former Olympian and someone who's been, you know, recognized by the Queen and a bunch of other important people, whose name happens to be Dick Pound, broke the news. Yep. He actually kind of leaked the story to the media. And I thought that was really interesting because when something like that happened, the most likely situation is that it's intentional. And so he was kind of told by the committee or whatever, you know, go ahead and leak the story so that the Japanese people get the picture that we're going to postpone it.
Yeah.
And there's no negotiation. But I don't know why they decided that that global bombshell had to be dropped by none other than Dick Pound.
No, that is a name for the ages. Nobody. What I love about it is he goes by Dick.
Yeah, because
Richie Pound or Rick Pound or Rich Pound or Richard Pound wouldn't have nearly the impact.
He chose that. That's the name that he likes.
He wanted Dick. He wanted Dick Pound.
And he's a former Olympian. So he was really good at something. I think he was like swimming. I'd hate to be in the same pool as him.
Yeah. I wonder how much drag he's got. You know what I'm saying?
he must have really strong arms.
Well, yeah, anyway,
so that's the thing we talk about on Tokyo Wave. It's, you know, we hit the serious stuff, but we also like to have a little bit of fun, especially with people who have names like Dick Pound.
Yeah. No, you cannot not have fun with a name like Dick Pound. I'll put, for anyone listening, I'll put a link in our show notes. So, yeah, go check it out and subscribe. Yeah.
Yeah, right now I think the only people listening to it are our parents and randos on the internet. So you can be the third rando.
Yeah, we'll test out. I'll have my people test out. We've had you on the podcast here before, so I know people at least affiliated with us know who you are.
Yeah, they're like, oh God, no, it's that guy again. Skip. See you next week.
I do. I am going to wind us down. I've been trying to keep these stream episodes to an hour, so I'm going to wind us down here. But Yeah, I appreciate you showing up, man. Well, showing up on the internet, likewise. That is. Yeah.
I hope everyone in Chattanooga, so I think I mentioned, but I'm originally from Chattanooga. Love Chattanooga. I was just there in December, and everything was fine. So it's really weird, you know. I was just over there, you know, Christmas, and everything was fine and dandy and normal, and we had New Year's and went through January, and then in February, bam!
Yeah.
Coronavirus.
Fuck this year, so, man. Yeah, this Jumanji game of a year.
Yeah, and so anyone who's listening to this, I mean, who's going on overseas, it's bad over here too. And, you know, people around the world are suffering. People are losing their jobs, losing their livelihoods. But we all have the same common interest in them. We don't want to die. So, you know, keep on keeping on. Support your local breweries. Stay at home. Wash your hands. Don't listen to that new PPAP song. It's garbage. It's about it. Peace.
Yeah. And thanks for coming, man. And for you guys out there listening, thanks for showing up. Thanks for subscribing to us. And if you're not, go ahead. Check out Tokyo Wave. Check out Riverside Wine and Spirits, where they will deliver you some alcohol within 5 miles. They're open till 7. They'll bring it out to your car. They're being safe down there. And this has been episode 243 of the Brew Chat podcast. I got to get my damn app open here. Here we go.